We return to where we began the show today, along the 2,000-mile stretch of land that is the U.S.-Mexico border. In 2017, 415 migrants died on the border. That's according to the International Organization for Migration. Harvard professor Yeva Yusonite has worked as an emergency responder in both northern Mexico and southern Arizona while conducting field work.
Some of the fire departments where I worked are in much more remote locations like Arivaca, where even to get to the hospital, it takes an ambulance maybe at least an hour, sometimes 2 hours to take the patient to the hospital from those areas.
As of 2016, the U.S. Border Patrol has employed more than 4,100 first responders, 730 emergency medical technicians, and more than 70 paramedics. That response force is assisted by local fire departments, ambulances, and volunteers. But Yusonite says responders are often stretched thin.
In addition to everything emergency responders ordinarily do in any department in the country, here they are also placed on the front lines of these converging wars the government has declared.
Yusonite compiled that research into a new book called Threshold, Emergency Responders on the U.S.-Mexico Border.
What surprised me was to learn how routine traumatic injuries have become in towns along our country's southern edge. That is, ambulances are sent for wounded border crossers so frequently that emergency responders refer to the cement ledge abutting the fence or the wall, depends how you want to call it, as the ankle alley. So we saw a lot of leg and spinal, neck and head injuries, something that I was not accustomed to. People who try to walk around urban areas through more remote desert and mountain terrain usually suffer dehydration or have heat stroke. So it is the environmental conditions that eventually wound them. So as a scholar and an emergency responder, I just was surprised to learn such a simple fact. It would seem that the taller and longer fences have not deterred people from trying to get across, only increased the risk of serious injury and death.
What happens when someone who's crossing the border needs to get medical care? Does it matter if they're coming here illegally or seeking asylum?
People who are seeking asylum usually present themselves at the port of entry, and then they are taken in by the Border Patrol, who then call in the doctors or the ambulances. If it's an emergency situation where a person is found in the desert or somebody who falls off the wall, it depends who finds them first. Very often, because there is such a dense Border Patrol presence, it is the Border Patrol who find the injured people in the first place. They can provide some first aid, but they cannot transport injured people to the hospital. So that's when they call local emergency services, when they ask for an ambulance, sometimes a helicopter. But there are other situations when the Border Patrol are not the first one to get in contact with the injured border crossers. There are a lot of humanitarian volunteers in the area. A group called No More Deaths has a medical treatment camp not far from Arivaca, where some of these border crossers can go, and the Border Patrol has, or at least had a policy of not going in and arresting people there. Sometimes local residents would call an ambulance, or if it's serious, or provide first aid. But usually, once they reach the hospital, that's where immigration services become involved. It didn't used to be that way up until early 2000s, let's say 2008, people would be taken to the hospitals and then they would leave. But now it's a little more blurred. The emergency responders are not in Arizona, are not allowed to ask for the patient's legal status. They don't ask for the person's social security number. They just provide that care to treat the injuries or deal with the illness that presents immediate threat to life or limb, and take care of the paperwork later at the hospital.
What struck you about what the workers were facing on a daily basis?
Well, these emergency responders notice how our different approaches to border security change the patterns of injuries. In the 1990s and early 2000s, the fence that was in the towns in southern Arizona was much shorter. It was 8 to 12 feet tall, but it had very sharp edges. So very often they would go to help injured border crossers who had their fingers amputated by the sharp edges of that fence. And now in 2011, that fence was replaced by a taller and sturdier bollard-style barrier that is in Nogales right now. It's about 20 feet tall. And people who fall off that fence have usually fracture their ankles or legs or spine, have head injuries. It's more of a multi-system trauma, which is perhaps a lot of emergency responders call the previous barrier inhumane, just because how bloody the injuries were. But now this is multi-system trauma. It will take months for people to heal. Looking at this from the perspective of emergency responders, it just shows how injuries change depending on what type of barrier we put on the border, but that people still try to come and risk injury and risk death. Over 7,000 people, and this is according to the Customs and Border Protection, so probably the numbers are much higher. Over 7,000 people have died trying to cross the border in the last 20 years. Some of these in the urban areas, even from falling off the fence or drowning in the drainage tunnels, others walking across the desert.
Is there a story that stands out to you, maybe a memory that you have from your time working on the border that you'd share with us?
Sure. I think when I was volunteering in the migrant aid center on the Mexican side of the border, it is just steps away from the border crossing, from the major port of entry in Nogales, Arizona. In this aid center, we saw a lot of elderly people who were deported from the United States after having lived in Phoenix for several decades or elsewhere in the country, who had high blood pressure, had diabetes, and who had no life in Mexico. And all they wanted to do was go back to the United States. But it was so hard when they said, you know, can you give us a pill to help us walk? By that, asking for ibuprofen, which was the only medication that we could give them for their pain, and telling them that they need to drink a lot of water, and knowing that they would never be able to carry enough water for the days that the journey would take. There was a pregnant woman that I met at the aid center who climbed on the fence on the Mexican side, but then changed her mind and fell back into Mexico. She was, I think, several months pregnant, but she didn't want to go to the hospital in Mexico. And again, she just came to the aid center to ask for some ibuprofen. It was just very sad to see how many ways they were wounded and that the only way you could do for them was to give them ibuprofen.
Yeva Yusonite is a professor at Harvard University and the author of the new book, Threshold, Emergency Responders on the U.S.-Mexico Border. Yeva, thanks so much.
You are very welcome.